Sorry, I can't believe I set up.
Hey, this is Phil, a.k.a. Corinne.
And I'm Alex Berg, and you're listening to the I'm from Driftwood podcast.
A quick favor to ask our listeners before jumping into today's episode. Take a few seconds to leave a five-star rating on the I'm from Driftwood podcast. More ratings and reviews help the podcast appear in recommendations, which means more people who need to hear all these queer and trans stories will be able to find them more easily. It just takes a few seconds and would make a big difference. All right, now on to today's episode.
On today's show, we are talking about rural queer stories. And we heard a story from Ray, who is from West Virginia.
I grew up on a 100-acre sheep farm out about an hour outside of a town of about 3,000 people. I believe it's the most beautiful spot on the planet. And I left for college. I went to college in Western Massachusetts, and I came out pretty much immediately after getting away from home. But all of my peers were either from cities or like booking it to New York or San Francisco as soon as we graduated. I ended up moving to Austin, Texas. I sort of bought into this, I think, very commonly held belief that rural places aren't safe or welcoming for queer folks. And I felt like I couldn't move home, even though I was like achingly homesick for the mountains for pretty much 10 years. I have a really vivid memory of being on the bus. I had a 4-hour-a-day bus ride, and a lot of horrible conversations happened on the bus, and one of those was a student behind me in the seat said we should put all the faggots on an island and drop a bomb on them. And I remember everyone on the bus laughing, and I remember just like feeling nauseous, and I wasn't out to myself as queer, but I just like had this like I have to leave, like I have to go far away, I have to get out. And I wanted to. In high school, I wanted to leave. I'd like tried everything I could to get out of here before I was a senior, and I did. I left for my senior year. I finally did move home in 2011, and I was really worried about it. I definitely didn't know what it was going to be like. I felt like I was going to be incredibly isolated, maybe not have community. Like, would I ever be able to date here? Like, what, you know, what's it like to be here full time? And I've largely found that like, there are rural queer folks kind of all over the place who are not only surviving, but they're thriving either in the communities where they came from or into chosen communities they've moved to. And I think there are like unique challenges to being queer in rural places, but I also think there are really unique sort of like joys to it, right? And I think for some queer folks who grow up in rural places, like they care just as much or more about, for example, the mountains where they were raised, or, you know, the plains or whatever landscape it was, or sort of like traditions and histories around farming or different things that are happening in rural places that as they do about their queerness. And so for me, moving home, I found a lot of that within a sort of Central Appalachian youth network, and found a lot of young people who are sort of fighting that urge of like the brain drain that happens a lot in Appalachia, that sort of just like out migration of young people to try to find more opportunities. And so I found sort of a network of young people who are really committed to staying and committed to like working on what we think needs to change in these mountains, a lot of whom are queer. And so we kind of have had a lot of conversations around like what it's like being queer in the mountains, what it's like coming back to a town where everybody knows you, and trying to kind of bring your whole self into that space. I think it's really important for young queer folks who are from rural areas to know that like staying is an option. Sometimes I think leaving is really important if you can, right? But like some young people don't have the choice to leave, and like what are they supposed to do, right? If like they live in a place that's like incredibly isolating as a queer person, like where they never see representations of people in media who are queer like them and are like super proud to be West Virginian like them. Like, where are they supposed to find like examples of themselves, right? And I think that actually like there are all sorts of rural queer folks with like amazing different types of experiences, whether like positive or negative, like incredibly diverse queer people all over the United States who are choosing to stay or don't have the option to leave. And like, I think our stories really need to be told. I think our faces need to be seen. I think we need to be visible. I think we need to not be silent anymore, so that young people know that it's like fine if they want to stay. If they are queer and like maybe want to go to a pride march sometime, but like really just want to take over the family farm, you know? Like, I had a 16-year-old kid from Canada write me an email last week saying that she lives with both parents who are pastors, her grandmother who makes homophobic comments all the time, but that she loves where she lives, that she like cares so much about this like rural place that she's from, and that reading these stories on the Country Queers website like makes her feel like she could stay, like she could be queer and she could have like the land that she loves so much, you know? And I think more stories like this are really important for queer folks.
You know, I did a little digging into like what Ray's doing, and Ray is doing a lot on this platform of talking about rural queer stories. Apparently they have a podcast called Country Queers, which I think is so adorable.
I love that.
Yeah, and they are creating this whole movement of getting queer people who live in rural areas to tell their stories so that people who are from rural areas or moving to rural areas know that queer people are there and they are living their best lives there and enjoying it. It's not, you know, we get these stories of like, you know, what's it like for people in rural areas or queer people in rural areas? Do you think it's dangerous? Do you think they're isolated? And the truth is, there's more to the story than that. And it sounds like what Ray's doing is trying to create this whole movement of, you know, going to rural places and getting stories from queer people who've been there for years and who are living wonderful lives. And they were saying that no two stories are the same. There are all these different stories of queer people living in rural areas and doing great.
Yeah, I feel like there can sometimes be this cosmopolitan mentality that all LGBTQ people are in cities or should be in cities, yes, or why would you want to be anywhere except a city? And that always negates the fact that queer and trans people are everywhere and oftentimes raised and born into locations such as rural areas. Yeah. And I feel like sometimes it can be a very condescending mentality to act that way, mm-hmm, and almost treat LGBTQ people who live in rural areas as like more provincial or, yes, something, which, yes, is ridiculous.
Right.
And also it kind of feeds into this idea that if you are queer or trans, you have to be in a city, which we should be able to be anywhere that we want to be.
We should. But you know what? I would like to say queer people are everybody in that we have preferences. Like, there's some people who want the urban living. They want the, you know, the clubs and the communities that are really close by. And there are others who grew up in rural areas and they love it. It's where they're from and they love these places. They love the mountains. I mean, Ray talks about loving the mountains and missing the mountains. Like, that's a real thing. You know, we're just like a straight person would be like, I don't want to leave this rural area. This is what I know. This is what I love. And people who are queer should be able to do that. No problem. And you're right. You said something about, Ray mentioned that some people can't leave. Like, what about that?
Yeah.
What about the people who can't leave? Shouldn't change happen for them? Shouldn't things change for them so they can live in the place that they love and not have to leave and really still thrive and do great?
Yeah, I think that you're raising such an important point, which is that not everybody can just wake up one morning and decide they can leave or want to leave, right, or have the access to the resources that it takes to uproot your life,
right,
and leave. And so I just think that it is this very passe idea of acting like, oh, if you're LGBTQ, just move to a city, it'll solve all your problems. Right. And it also glosses over that there's transphobia and homophobia everywhere. And yes, I think that it is easier to find your community in the city, but in the reality is it's also here.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times when we think about being LGBTQ or any marginalized identity in rural areas, a lot of times you think of this like horror movie mentality of being like isolated.
Yeah.
And there's kind of that creepiness of, yeah, being, yeah, alone and maybe with people who don't have the same attitudes and opinions of you. And I feel like a lot of times I have totally felt that way when I've been in rural places, but at the same time, it does erase the experiences of queer and trans folks who are in those rural places, right, and all different kinds of people who are in rural places and doing important work,
exactly,
in those places.
Right. Exactly. And again, going back to, you know, something like Country Queers, you know, Ray's podcast, the idea of telling the stories of people who live in those areas and are enjoying it, liking it, and don't feel like they need to leave, you know. A lot of what I read about people, queers in rural areas, is that some of them will leave and come right back. You know, they'll leave and they'll go to the city and be like, okay, I need to go to the city because I'm like, this is where my people are. But then they end up coming back because it's in their blood. It's in their hearts. This is where they want to be. And they should be able to be everywhere. We should be able to be everywhere, safely, of course, and enjoying our lives.
I also love this point that Ray made about how LGBTQ people oftentimes have like a great deal of care for nature. And I was wondering like where that comes from, because I do feel like, you know, why is that? Like the sense of autonomy and independence. And I guess maybe because sometimes when you're LGBTQ, you do care more about certain social issues, about climate change or environmentalism. I think that sometimes because being LGBTQ connects you more with a lot of other issues around justice, you maybe are sometimes more connected.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I love that.
Country queers. Yes.
Yeah.
I freaking love that. Are you kidding? I think I'm a country queer possibly. Okay. I think I have a little, I definitely have some urban in me, but I definitely have a little country in me too. And I got to tell you, you know, as I get older, I'm like, give me the country. Give me the country. Seriously. I love nature. I really love nature. I love birds. I love, you know, like trees. I love being out in that. And so, and right now I love both, but there may come a time in my life when I'm like, nope, take me out to the country.
I also think that I'm a burgeoning country queer.
Oh, what? What has happened?
Well, as you know, like now, as I've talked, you know, a lot in my personal life about, I have a place in upstate New York.
Yeah,
and
it's awesome.
Yeah. And I actually think I also held, as somebody who grew up in a city, I've only known city life. I have been around many attitudes where people were like, "Ah, the country's not for you. You'll never find your people." And what I found is that there is a really rich LGBTQ community. I mean, rich as in like, you know, the culture of it is rich, and that also everyone should be able to have nature and take a breather from whatever is going on and walk outside and have space. And so I feel like it has made me challenge some of my assumptions about what that area would mean. And like, people are doing rad stuff in the area. Like there are farms that are run by LGBTQ collectives of people. There are people doing amazing activist work. And I just feel like, you know, sometimes the city or media narrative is really unfair to rural areas.
It is. I totally agree with that. And I think you're right. I think that we think that everything's happening in the city, all of the goodness is coming out of the city, you know, but we're not thinking about in some of these areas that are just out, you know, out in rural areas, out in the country, somewhere where it's just like there's no spotlight, right? So you don't know about all the wonderful things they're doing until you may go and visit, or you know a friend of a friend. And there are people doing incredible things that just are not getting publicized. They're not getting any like spotlight. You know, one thing that when I was reading up on Ray, it was very interesting, was the idea that in the stories, there is some talk of isolation, right? There is some talk of feeling isolated. And it was so interesting that in the article, I think it was actually like a National Geographic article. They tied it into, you know, no one could have known that COVID was coming. And when COVID got here, the general public had to deal with isolation. You know, a lot of people had to deal with the thought of isolation.
Right? Interesting.
And it was so interesting to read this article, and I think Ray says something like, we know isolation, like we've done that, you know, and now everyone else is learning some of what that looks like. And I'm not saying that's everyone's story. I'm not saying that everyone who's a rural queer is isolated, but some people who have lived in rural areas and are queer know isolation, and they know needing to find community. And the larger world had to deal with that when COVID hit. You know, we didn't have the everyday things we had around us. We had to stay indoors. We had to stay away from family members. We had to stay away from friends. And we had to understand how to surpass isolation and how to deal with it in a very different way. Mm. Yeah, so interesting.
Wow, that I'm like thinking about that for a second.
Right?
That's so interesting.
Right, because it's just like, what I think is beautiful is watching someone a queer person who is building or creating this project based off of something that was something they needed for themselves. Like, I think Ray's idea of doing something like this podcast, even telling their story to I'm From Driftwood, is a way of telling stories that need to be heard and that need to be witnessed.
Mm.
And I think that's incredible.
Well, on that note, we also heard a story today that has a different perspective about staying and leaving a rural area.
My name is Levi Wade. I'm from Harrison, Arkansas. So the town I'm from, Harrison, Arkansas, there's an active KKK outside of the town. And I remember specifically when I was younger, one time, my father, who's kind of darker complected, he's half Filipino. We were in the parking lot of a Walmart and some strangers yelled out the N-word at him. It was that moment that I kind of realized I wasn't living in a very diverse, colorful, tolerant community, but that of one where there were virtually no minority representation, no people of color, no gay people, just straight white people. Because I had no other gay people to turn to, I was kind of seeking them out on Yahoo chat rooms. I remember specifically one night I was talking to someone on one of those chat rooms and I was telling them about how being where I'm from was really isolated and lonely and there was no one like me to really turn to. And he specifically told me that it wouldn't always be like that and that I needed to kind of follow wherever my gut was leading me to go, where there were more people like me. Fast forward to I'm in high school, I'm all with my girlfriends and they're kind of crying over their relationship woos and the dramas that entailed that. And I remember kind of oddly feeling jealous because it was just something that I wasn't able to experience and didn't know what was like. And I remember thinking back to the chat rooms and the people that I was talking to and telling me that I needed to go somewhere where I could experience these things. Fast forward, I'm 18. I made an online friend that lived in Little Rock. He introduces me to a guy that we start dating. I graduate high school. And my mom was kind of trying to convince me to stay behind in Harrison and go to the community college there. But because of this boy that I met, I was very adamant about leaving and not staying behind in Harrison. So I remember though my friends taking me out after me and the guy that I had moved down to Little Rock for had broken up. And they were there kind of holding my hand, guiding me through it, making sure I was liquored up to get over everything. And it was definitely kind of a full circle moment in that where I once was wondering what that was like, I was now living it. A support system, gay representation, gay visibility, gay nightlife to hang out in, a large group of people to rely on. If you are an LGBT kid in rural America, you are not confined to where you are at. If where you are at is not okay for you to be at, you can escape where you're at and you can come out okay. There are aspects of uncertainty to it, but if you are self-assured and you know what you want, you're going to land where you should be. And that's something that you should hold on to and kind of let guide you.
I think this is the other side of that coin that we're talking about, right? So it's the idea that if you are somewhere where you can't find what you're looking for, you can't find the community that you need, you can't plug into community, take it, they go somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I don't think that's wrong. I don't think that's wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think that it is about the individual. It's like, what do you want and what do you need out of your life, right?
Yeah.
Where do you feel most at home? And you really need to listen to where your heart belongs.
Totally.
Leaving was great for him, yeah. Right? He found, you hear him talking about these friends who nursed him and made sure he was okay and took him out for drinks. You know, after this breakup, just to be like, we got you. You know, he felt held and supported. And I think that you do get a lot of that in the city, but I don't think that that's impossible to get also if you stayed in a rural town, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We just talked about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like Levi had some very violent experiences in his town. And I think that, you know, we're always saying there's no monolithic experience of being an LGBTQ person, that for him it was very liberating to be able to leave and needed to leave and get out of there and find community. And, you know, his, you put it perfectly, it's the other side of the coin, right? Like Levi's conclusion is that he wants to remind people that LGBTQ youth can always relocate to find their community, which is also true.
Right. It's weird. It's an and,
yeah,
right?
Such an and.
Like all of, there's like all, we're tacking on all these ands. It's like, you can leave, you can stay. And if you can't leave, you can stay. And if you can leave, you can leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all of those things, right? And it just come down to what do you need and where do you feel like the fullest?
Yeah.
You know, like I can definitely, like I said, like I can see getting old and fully being like, okay, should I get a couple of chickens? What do I do? You know, maybe a couple of goats, some llamas. Like,
I feel like goats, that is ambitious, you know? Chickens, I get. Like, chickens will just like,
by the way,
wander.
They are not easy.
Chickens?
I guess.
TBD on the chickens. You always want the option of the chickens.
Right. You know, the fresh eggs. I get it. Unless I'm vegan by then. So by that point, it may not matter. But if you were to look at other stories, you hear sometimes them talking about going to the city and not working out for them. Even if they think that's where they need to be, they can't make the connections they want. They're not finding the community that they thought was there for them. And they go back. Right. So I think what I want to say about some of this is that if you have to go back, you do need to make your life in a way that works for you, mm-hmm. and you're happy. Right. If you can't be in the city, if the city's not where you are and where you want to be, then how do you make yourself? How do you build something for yourself, mm-hmm. in the community you're in? You know, find other queer people, create some sort of social circle, something. What about the idea of, can we build something instead of just leaving to go find it somewhere else?
Yeah.
You know?
And it's tough. You know, I'm thinking about places like that really, you know, the violence of the interaction that Levi had in his town, like, yeah. what it would take to build something, you know, knowing that you are actively unsafe there,
right.
and
right.
that building community, I mean, it just can be such a challenge, mm-hmm. in those places, you know, but it's also like, how do you know that people are even there until you try? It just makes me respect people's own personal decisions about why they need to move where they need to move. It's interesting because I was thinking about this, like, you know, having grown up in Philly, I don't know. I always wanted to live in New York City and kind of always knew that it was like, there were a lot of LGBTQ people here, a lot of gay culture. I just always knew I wanted something bigger than Philly, yeah. but also never really had to grapple with the idea that I wouldn't be able to find some kind of community wherever I was. It's, you know, and I feel like as an adult now having much more autonomy and choice about the spaces that I want to put myself in, I see why it would be so isolating not to have those options, and how I feel really lucky that I grew up in the city that I grew up in. But also, I think to your point about community, you know, my family comes from a section of South Philly that was not open to just about anyone. And I also think that growing up specifically in the community that I grew up in, which is a very accepting community in Philadelphia, it is even so highly localized in that way. Like, had I just grown up a half hour on the other side of town, super different attitude, you know?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I loved what we were talking about earlier, how you feel like you've changed your mind a little bit about what it means to be like out in the country and like living out there or existing out there, and how you've changed your mind a little bit about that. You know, with COVID, a lot of people moved. They moved. And some of those people were planning on doing that at some point. Some of those people left because they're just like, I need space. And if I get more space, it's, you know, COVID is easier to deal with. There's a number of things that are happening. So there's a lot of people who have left the city, left cities, and gone to places where it's, you know, they get a little more space. And so, you know, I wonder also what that migration is going to look like, you know, when we're looking back, like, what is it going to look like? You know, when we start looking at these areas and there's more queer people, you know, in these areas, and you're like, wow, this was about COVID. Like, this happened. And it may have happened over time, but it happened quicker because of COVID, I think. In some ways.
I also feel like sometimes in more rural communities, if you know who you're looking for, you know.
Do you
know what I mean?
I feel like, do you need like to do like Like I was online today. I was online today. I was on Instagram watching how people like were like talking about the queer signals, and I was like, oh, I don't know what the queer signals are. Let me find out what they are. I mean, sure, an undercut. We all know an undercut. Like, but what
Got
else is
one
there?
Of those, you know? Yeah.
It's like, what else is there? And apparently it's like, there's these earrings that people make. Is that a thing? Like, do you
know? I don't know about that. Are there? What are
like,
they?
Like earrings that they craft themselves somehow. And I'm like, that's supposed to tell people you're queer?
Interesting.
And then like, like vintage pins.
Okay.
With like feminist sayings on. I was like, I would see that and be like, I would not know.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be hard to say.
Right.
Yeah.
So obviously my gaydar, my queerdar is way off and it's on the fritz.
You need to read up on your signals.
I need to go get it tuned up is what I need to go.
Yeah.
It's like really bad. I have no idea. I'm like, so when you're in these areas, I'm like, what happens? How do like you said, you know who you're looking for.
I just feel like, I don't know. Sometimes I know. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, I don't know, a really good haircut. No, that's ridiculous. I get it. It's like, that just means that somebody has interesting taste. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, you just don't know.
No, it's so hard to say. I actually, what this is making me think about is in upstate New York, you know, again, countering sometimes these very dismissive ideas about rural areas. In upstate New York, there were these resorts that were for, at the time, what was understood to be male-to-female crossdressers in the 50s and 60s. And they were places where, at the time, obviously the way people were understanding gender at that time was that they were male-to-female crossdressers, and you would go, and it was understood that these were men who were learning how to do makeup and learning how to pose for photos with their friends.
Upstate?
Yes, upstate. I highly recommend anybody listening go Google. Check it out. One of them was called Casa Susana. The photos are incredible. But it's just one of those reminders that's like, there are these other pieces of history, I feel like, that actually have been seldom recorded because it was, you know, LGBTQ folk, gender nonconforming folk being upstate in these like houses that were incredibly isolated by design so that they could go
safely
do their thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Safely. But you know, and that just speaks to how there's such a very well recorded history of the journey that LGBTQ the community has gone through here in the city, in cities, right? But when it comes to those urban areas, what are all these stories that people don't know about?
Yeah,
like, well, how much history has been not recorded or not talked about, or people are not aware of?
Yeah,
like I can't even imagine. If we really dug in, we'd be shocked.
Yeah, and I even think like now it's interesting to see all these themes that we're talking about play out in the national news. Like I'm thinking about, there is some incredible organizing happening in rural areas, especially in the South, around issues of bodily autonomy. Mm. You know, I'm specifically thinking about like reproductive justice you know, all of these movements that are oftentimes led by queer and trans folk and just how like a lot of times you even see in the national news, mm-hmm. there's such a dismissive idea towards stuff that's happening in rural areas.
I mean, I was born in Brooklyn, right? So, I mean, I am not a rural queer. I can't really call myself that. I may
rural queer in your heart.
Right. I may end up being a rural queer at some point, but right now I'm not. So I think the way I relate is in many ways to what Levi said, because even though I grew up in Queens, you know, I was born in Brooklyn, I did have to go to a very urban area to find what I was looking for. To find community, to find the people that made me feel like they could be my chosen family. So I really relate to that, but I definitely have a lot of admiration for people who kind of stuck it out and said, I want to stay here and I'm not willing to leave just because this area and this community doesn't understand me and is not willing to accept me. I want to change it because I think that there are others who want this, and I want to do that for them, and I want to do that for myself.
Yeah, I feel like I relate to exactly kind of similarly to what you're saying, you know, in that I am from Philly and born and raised there, and, you know, also had to move to other areas to find that sense of chosen family and community. And totally props to, you know, anyone sticking it out wherever they are. Swimming upstream against whatever the tide is in that place.
The biggest takeaway, which is kind of what we talked about earlier, is that this is a very personal choice. This has to be a choice that resonates with you and is a personal choice. There is no right answer here. There is no right thing to do here. It's about what, I think it's about considering your safety, obviously. It's about considering where you want to be. And if you are staying to make change, you know, are you ready to take that on? Like, are you really ready to take that on so that you can create an environment that works for you and works for others who, you know, maybe are younger and going to really appreciate this as they get older?
I think my big takeaway is people should live their lives however they want. And basically the same takeaway as you. And then also just that relocating is really freaking difficult.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's easy to be dismissive of people who choose to stay where they're staying, because maybe other people don't understand it, but just that it's really hard and requires a lot of resources to move. And I also have a great appreciation for people who want to stay and change the culture of where they are.
Driftwood Podcast is hosted by Phil, aka Corinne,
and Alex Berg, and is produced by Andy Egan Thorpe. It's recorded as a program of I'm From Driftwood, the LGBTQAI+ story archive.
Its mission is to send a life-saving message to queer and trans people everywhere. You are not alone.
I'm From Driftwood's founder and executive director is Nathan Mansky. Its program director is Damian Mittelfeld.
Our score is provided by Elevate Audio.
The stories you heard today are available in their entirety, plus thousands more, at imfromdriftwood.org.
You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Or subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This program is supported in part by public funds from the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs
in partnership with the City Council.
Additional funding is provided by the Humanities New York Sharp Grant, with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Federal American Rescue Plan Act.
Thanks for listening, y'all.